Hi, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the TeachNet podcast. Today, I'm joined by two of the rock stars of AI in education. That's Dan Bone and Ray Fleming, and they have a really popular podcast out of Australia. And I want to really say a special thanks to them. They've got up early in the morning to join us for the recording of this podcast. So, gentlemen, you're both really welcome to the TeachNet podcast. And I'm going to start by asking you both to introduce yourselves and tell us how this podcast started and go from there.
Well, beauty before age. So off you go, Dan.
I'm Dan. I used to be a teacher in the UK, in London, and then a school inspector, and worked for National Strategies through government to support the curriculum reform there at that point. And then I moved to Australia, worked at the university, doing teaching quality there. And then moved into Microsoft and been at Microsoft for about 12, 13 years now doing education. So education's been in my blood and in my work since I was in school, I suppose.
Well, I think that tells in the podcast. Ray?
I don't have an education backstory because I've always worked with education, but never in education. It just so happened that after I left school, the first company I went to work for, a company called RM in the UK, did education IT. And yes, here I am 40 something years later, still doing education IT. I worked with Dan at Microsoft. I then was with Google as their global lead for education solutions for Google Cloud. So it's really interesting that I kind of come into it with a perspective of there are things I don't know. And the one of the things I don't know is I don't know how to teach. I can't tell anybody anything about that. All I can talk about is what I see other people doing and talking about. Dan and I were in the same team at Microsoft when we started the AI in Education podcast in 2019. The thing I'd say about 2019 and AI was I'm pretty sure that everybody that listened to our podcast was wearing a hoodie and thought about algorithms. And then we went to 2022 and suddenly the podcast fundamentally changed. We were no longer talking about linear regression.
Yeah, and it was interesting because what we were trying to do was shine a spotlight. And to a certain extent, there was a lot of stuff going on. And at that point, when we were both working for Microsoft, and it's never been endorsed officially by Microsoft, the podcast, it's always been a kind of a skunk works project. And now it's very independent, but it's very much around amplifying stories of people and humans and teachers in AI and IT. And at that point, it was lots of data and that kind of angle on AI. So you're interviewing people who are analyzing, you know, performance of students at risk, things like that. Yeah, and talking to me, just really interesting people, because it was quite hard to get case studies out and stories. And it was about sharing stories and educating people. And I remember Ray sat down with me with a OneNote and he said, who is the audience of this? Who is the personas we're going to aim for? And it was like business, decision makers, some IT teachers. And every time we record an episode, I always think about, okay, how is this relevant to a teacher who's going to be in a car driving home from school, needs a kind of quick download on stuff or listening to something that's happened that's realistic. So, and it's morphed from there, really.
Well, Dan, that's the profile of myself. I mean, most of my family get into my car and I have your podcast on. Typically, it's one of the ones I have on my playlist. And one of them will usually say, you're not listening to that AI again. Like, that's interesting. 2019, I can only imagine. Like, how has it evolved, Ray? You've got more structured, you've kind of taken a thematic approach. How has that all evolved and how has that worked for you guys?
I think really the way it's evolved is that people are involved. And what I mean by that is when it started, it was people listening to what other people were doing. And I always say this, it's like the age of algorithmic AI was everyone would sit in a room, everyone knew AI did something. It put things on their Netflix feed or it decided what posts Facebook was going to show you. But the doing of it was limited to, as I'm going to put it, the people in hoodies that went off and did things after a meeting. We didn't understand what was being done. Whereas now, I think we have conversations that immediately spark a teacher who's maybe not a technologist being able to go and do something with it. Because AI has evolved to the fact that actually it's essential human skills. It's empathy, understanding, good questioning skills are now at the core of what you need to make AI work. Whereas before, you needed a PhD in rocket science in order to be able to do it.
That was interesting because the transition that we'd gone through as well, there was a little bit of a no man's land because Ray left Microsoft at that point, and then I had another co-host, and then we had another co-host, and it's not lost on us at all that it's two white guys talking about AI, and you know, we need representation and things like that. So we had Beth, who was a co-host, but then because Gen AI hadn't landed and it was the start of kind of GPTs and things like that, we were talking about them, but we sort of strayed out and were talking about STEM stuff, skilling, yes. Still relevant, but it wasn't yes. really landing the AI and education message. And we had a couple of moments where we sat down and said, let's reflect on this podcast again. Is it, are we still true to our audience? Are we still doing things that are relevant? So if you look back at some of the other ones we interviewed, like an astronaut about their inclusion in skilling and STEM and things like that. Yes. So we'd kind of done a lot of the data stuff, and then we were kind of transitioning around. So it's really started to look at skills and things like that. And then as soon as the Gen AI bubble landed, I suppose, if we want to call it a bubble, then yeah. suddenly we could then lift in another trajectory and go back to what we intended at the beginning.
Yeah. And I mean, I can totally understand that and I can totally get it. I mean, this is probably an unfair question, but I'll ask both of you this. Like, over the 6 years, is there any particular episode or any particular story in there that really struck home or resonated or that really kind of impacted on you both? Again, Ray, I might go to you on that one.
Do you know what? So I'm going to go with my recency bias. Really interesting this year. We did an interview maybe only 2 months ago with a person that was a part of the Indigenous community in Australia, and it completely changed my perspective about Indigenous data rights. Now, two things we learned. One thing we learned is that people get switched off by the discussion. Like, we saw a drop off in people listening just simply when we got into it. But the second thing I learned was, why are we prepared to give ownership of data to corporations and organizations and not to people? And so it kind of got me then thinking about what they're doing in Denmark with your face belonging to you, not belonging to somebody that can go and steal it. And so that was really profound for me because it was a deep conversation that we'd not had on the podcast in the previous 6 years that made me completely rethink the way that we were thinking about the data. Yeah, I mean, there are so many beautiful, lovely stories of amazing teachers that come and tell us things, but that was the one because it completely made me change my mental approach to data.
The one that stuck out to me is called A Tale of Two AIs, I think we called it. And it was interviewed with one of my friends, actually, from the UK. It was bizarre because I had a call from my mum. Like, it said, hey, Martin's on the telly. And I'm like, what? I put the BBC International News on, and he was sharing this AI that he had in the classroom where he had a student who was suffering with cancer and was going through chemotherapy. And he had an AI robot that the kids were carrying around, and he could partake in his lessons, and he had a camera on it. It was a robot, basically. And it was really heartwarming story that was on the news in the UK. But when I spoke to him, he said, well, look, we've had a big issue where a lot of our high stakes exams have been failed because of Turnitin, and nobody could really point to the black box algorithm there and think, you know, basically the exam board had said all of these marks are kind of invalid and everybody's going to get zero. So there was this episode, the same school, with these two polarizing examples of how AI was so human, but then so robotic and not discerning with anything. And that always sticks out to me.
Yeah, I know. And I actually remember that one. And I mean, let's call a spade here. Both of you are quite exercised on plagiarism, cheating and detection tools, Ray. Isn't that right?
Well, how wonderful to be able to come on somebody else's podcast to say AI detectors don't work, because we've said it so many times on ours.
You reminded us only most recently in the last episode. I did hear that part, Ray.
So in the latest episode at the end of 2025, we ran an award ceremony. You'll remember that because Dan was dressed up as an Italian waiter.
I did. He looked very well.
And what was fantastic about that was every second episode, I talk about the interesting research papers I've read on AI in education. We talked about something like 95 research papers last year. I summarized them in a uniquely me way. And so far, I've not had any researchers complaining that I've done it badly. But I got to give a paper of the year out, and my research paper of the year this year was Heads You Win, Tails You Lose. And it was basically an academic version of what we've been saying, which is AI detectors don't work. So there's so much compelling evidence that it's kind of misleading people.
I suppose that leads me into, where do you think we stand now? I mean, this discussion on cheating and plagiarism, I think it's kind of, I don't hear it as loud as that I used to hear it, but where do you think we are in terms of the big issues as we face into the new year? Where are we in the whole area of AI? And I'm particularly thinking Gen AI at the moment. Where do you think?
Well, like, I'm very passionate about this because I go into schools all the time. You know, I go into like multiple schools each week, and this, and it is an Australian angle. It is a bias because I'm in Australian schools, but I'm also in that discourse, like we all are on LinkedIn and Twitter and social media. I think there's a massive, massive equity gap that's happening. So when we look at schools, I think very conscious that like a lot of us in this space are in an echo chamber. We see the same teachers talking about the amazing stuff. But when you go into a school and you're speaking to 50 staff, there's usually 10 that are using AI and understand it. There's usually one or two that are super users who are using, you know, Gemini and Nano Banana and all this, and they care about the models and all of that. But 70% of the staff don't really know how to use it. There's a lot of education that needs to be done. And then that gap is then amplified when we look at students, because students are kind of missing from the conversation a lot of the time, because schools are still working out, what are we doing as adults in this area? Whereas kids are just cracking on and using things on their phones, on their laptops, and using stuff. And therefore, there's this digital divide that's happening because we're not talking about it. A bit like this happening in social media, where some people are using it, some people are not. So, and I'm seeing it with my own kids, where, you know, I've got them sort of staggered, you know, from a 12, 13-year-old to a 16-year-old to an 18-year-old. They all use AI differently. They're all exposed to it differently. And they all have got different ideas on that. So I think, and also when we spoke, it's very hard to get a real view on it, because when you speak to students, you end up speaking to students who use AI and they're very good and capable of AI. It's very hard to get the people who are a bit apathetic to that technology as well. This equity thing for me is a big issue from staff, and it's the state of the general population as well when we look around at our family and friends. So, you know, I don't want to sound doom and gloom about it.
Definitely. No. Ray, where do you think we're at and what's coming down the tracks in your view?
Gosh, I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow in AI stakes, let alone next year. I think something I've been saying for a while is if we just stop the development of AI right now, there's probably 10 years before we integrate it fully into what we've currently got going on. You know, like if I see the pace of change, take education, for example, and the idea of AI tutoring. What the current technology is probably going to be capable of is going to take us a while to work out and work out the best way to be able to use it and the most appropriate way to be able to use it. So I think it's just that continuation of embedding. And, you know, Dan talked about students. I'm always drawn back to our series 12, where what we did was we said to a group of guests, we don't care what you think, we care what students think. And so we had some students on talking about how they actually used it, not what other people thought they should be doing, but what they were actually doing. And then we talked to some researchers, not about their opinions about students, but what did you find out about what students are doing? So we could get this picture from a student's perspective, because all too often we hear from education specialists who say what students should be doing. Well, yes, that's fine, but that isn't what they're actually doing. So that series captured what people were doing. And so I think we're still going to have that differential journey. You know, teachers will be in different places. Students will be in different places. People have access to slightly different technology, although I actually don't think that's as big an issue as skills, aptitudes, and motivation to use it.
And another thing just to add, sorry, while we were just talking there, Ray, sorry to interrupt you a little bit there, but it was, I think the other trend that I'm seeing, and I'm a little bit biased here because obviously I still work for Microsoft, but I'm seeing a lot of, it's almost giving me Web 2 vibes, right? We've all been around the traps long enough in ed tech to know that there's millions of apps out there, and I'm still seeing this now. There's a lot of people spruiking all these different apps, right? Eventually, a lot of those apps are going to die off and you're going to end up with certain things. But there is a very clear delineation using a chatbot like OpenAI and using Gemini in Workspace or Copilot in that, because that's where the power comes into it. And then Gemini and all these bespoke chatbots fall away, because it's when teachers can then say, hey, Gemini, I've got a meeting with a parent tomorrow. Look at my emails, look at my files and tell me and prepare me for that meeting. That grounded commercial version of AI is very different to consumer versions of AI. So there's a bit of tension there.
And I think point actually is bringing both of the equity piece and the embedding piece together. Because if I don't know, if I'm a teacher, and if I don't understand and I don't know if I'm not competent and if I'm not confident, I can't make those decisions that you're talking about there because it's just too much for me. And I think this is leading on something else. I was at an AI summit in Naples a couple of months ago, really good event. And I mean, there was a lot of discussion going on. It was a very uplifting event. All of these discussions, what you've just been talking about there, it seems to me are now impacting on what does teaching look like? What does learning look like? What does schooling look like? You know, the role of the teacher, human agency, what things we're going to offload to this machine, what we are not going to offload to the machine. This also has implications for the learners or the students, whatever word we're going to use. Any thoughts on that from your perspective?
I'm going to say I feel really strongly about the tail wagging the dog, the AI tail wagging the education dog. I've seen people that say, oh, well, AI is going to replace teachers. Well, I couldn't disagree more strongly with that because I think it's people that look at a role and go, oh, well, the role is to deliver information. Oh, AI is really good at doing that. Well, it's not. The teachers that I remember are not the ones that delivered information. They're the ones that motivated me to learn. And so there are careers that I will actively encourage a 17, 18-year-old to not think about. Don't go study law if you want to become a junior lawyer. Maybe there's not enough jobs. You know, maybe there's not going to be enough jobs in journalism. But, you know, if you want a job for life, go and study education, go and study to be a teacher, because those skills are going to be so incredibly valuable and still required.
But Ray, I'm not saying for 1 minute that we're going to get rid of teachers. I totally agree with you, right? But what I'm wondering is the work of the teacher and the way we organize teaching, learning, and assessment, I wonder, is that going to change or is it going to evolve?
I think you're right. You know, there's always that adage you see as before. If you take a teacher out of a classroom 100 years ago and put them in now, they could crack on as normal. Whereas if you take a surgeon out and put them into an operating theatre, they wouldn't have a clue what to go on. And it's interesting the way the like high-stakes stuff like medicine has embraced technology. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think the other complexity in that area is when the role of teachers to maybe mentors, guides, supportive people around that learning journey, but also around those human skills, you know, and actually focusing on societal things, because the role of school isn't just about, you know, the knowledge, it's about creating humans and people that are kind of valuable to society. And you know, you start asking what society is, but also from a teacher point of view, one of our episodes with Leanne Cameron, she's a teacher trainer up in Queensland now. It was kind of a big episode that actually landed with us. She was like the biggest episode last year, I think, you know, 2024. But she was talking about how she thinks AI is going to be the silver bullet for kind of supporting teacher burnout, because you've got a lot of that in Australia at the minute. The younger teachers are moving away from that profession after about 3 to 4 years. You know, a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of red tape. And I remember that from teaching myself. And, you know, in the UK, where you're going through Ofsted inspections, you'd have to write and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite lesson plans by hand. It was hard work and very demanding. And that's a lot of the time that you were doing at home. So, you know, if the nature of teaching is changing and the nature of planning and assessment is changing and teachers are going to become guides, then hopefully that profession generally will become a healthier, more interesting, and more fun profession.
Yeah, but you mentioned equity. And I'm thinking of these tools. And again, not getting into ages here, but I remember working with integrated learning systems in a school system outside Boston in 1993. So intelligent tutoring systems are not new. But we have new ones now. And I'm just thinking about the classroom from an equity perspective and what these technologies can give us if we're able, you mentioned UDL and learning design. If we're able to design learning experiences, and Ray, you mentioned the embedding piece. This is the piece that I am struggling with myself, is the knowledge and competence of the teacher to be able to manage these tools and to embed them so that the child who needs extra help or who needs a, you know, who needs that robot or who needs that particular integrated learning system to help them or whatever it is, and how they manage the rest of the activity in the classroom, I think is a very highly skilled person. And my question is, how are we going to help them to get there because of all of the other things, the paperwork that we ask them to do in every system in the world? So any thoughts on that?
I have a dream that AI is going to be taking the bins out and doing the washing up while I get on and do creative things. And I think that's the same situation for teachers. You know, let's get the AI to go and do the stuff that nobody cares about. Okay, I'm sure somebody cares about, but that bit that Dan described of rewriting lesson plans, and then you kind of rewrite it, punch a hole in the paper and put it in the file, put it on the shelf, and nobody ever looks at it again, except for the Ofsted inspector. And I'm going to call Dan out here because he was telling what a drain it is, and then he went to be an Ofsted inspector. Like, how could you do that, Dan?
I thought the very same thing. Poacher turned gamekeeper, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let's use AI for those things so that your professional judgment can come in. And whether it's a teacher or you're a marketing person or you're an author or whatever, use AI in that context to be able to give you the time to go and do the creative things. The problem I think we have is that it's too easy to use it to do things that require intelligence. You know, it's too easy to actually start using it to allow you to switch your brain off. We've got to be aware of how we choose to use it.
Yeah, you're right. And we're in this mode in education where, oh, this is the way you do it. And I think this is generally, you know, I suppose this is government as well. You know, it's like, right, what happens as a government? What we've got to do, we've got to put a policy in. Then our policy turns into a framework. That framework then disseminates down. By the time it lands, you know, what we've got in Australia is people don't really, if you ask them about the Australian framework for Gen AI, they probably don't even know what it is on the whole. So it's about trying to get to the teachers really quickly to say, hey, and the way we've seen success is where you've got a bullish kind of leadership team in a diocese or in a school system that goes, we're going to do this. We're going to lead with this. We're going to do it ourselves. We're going to implement the technology and we're going to back ourselves on this. And we're going to have a clear change management procedure. And we're going to do this to hit, you know, some of the things. And we're going to check it as we go in and see, do some research and make sure that it's having efficacy in the classroom. Because you're right, the training, what we've seen at the minute is all this other training is cascading down teachers, especially in Australia, that which had nothing to do with AI. And AI literally has been sidelined over here, even though it could help with the stuff that's being disseminated in the sense. So, you know, people are missing out on training opportunities and implementation.
I would agree with you to a point. Ray, I know on the efficiency line, you know, I hear it all the time. I read it all the time. And yes, it is. But my question is, you know, and we have issues with teachers leaving the profession all over the world. And there's a lot of Irish teachers down in Australia who have decided they don't want to teach up here and they've gone down there. Maybe it's more to do with the weather, but I don't know. Anyway, my question is, like, should we just take some of that admin out of it altogether? And I would love to see them, you know, if it can help there on the lesson planning and all that, fine. But I'm more interested in seeing the creativity stuff, the creative side of these tools. And my other question to you is, again, from what you're seeing in Australia, is there a movement to develop tools that teachers really want? Are we putting tools into the hands of teachers? Like, I'm thinking in France, for example, the French ministry have gone out over the last 5 or 6 years. They've said, we need a tool for this particular problem. In Croatia, they identified an issue in dropout. They went after that specifically with AI. Is that happening in Australia? So that the tail isn't wagging the dog, but actually that the teachers and the schools are saying, hold on, guys, these are the tools we need. This is what we want. Can you build them for us? Is that discussion happening down there?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's happening everywhere. But what we're seeing is a profusion of individual apps to do individual jobs. My perspective has always been, pick a tool, go deep on it, and discover what it can do for you. So you know, I've been an enthusiastic ChatGPT or Gemini or Copilot user of, I'm going to get deep into that tool and work out how it's going to help me solve a problem rather than, oh, well, I'm going to go and buy another AI thing to do that job for me. So, and especially when you understand AI, you look at a lot of this stuff and go, well, it's just a prompt. It's just a wrapper around ChatGPT or whatever. So I have a view that general tools with the skills to be able to use them for a specific task are where we're going to end up. But in the meantime, my goodness, the change for teachers must be huge. Like, I spend one day a week just thinking about and understanding the latest developments in AI, and I can't keep up. So I understand that those tools, you know, the thing that writes the lesson plan, the thing that checks, writes feedback for a student,
yes.
Those tools will, for a while, those individual tools will come to the fore, because I'll look at it and go, sure, I can save an hour a week or 2 hours a week with it doing that task for me. The debate is often, should you be using AI for that task? One of the interesting things around teachers is there's two interesting statistics. One is the amount of time that they work. They work for a huge number of hours every week because they'll sit down in the evening and mark homework for students and provide feedback. The other one is teachers generally spend a lot of money out of their own pocket to buy things in order to be able to teach. Australia is big for both of those. I think Australian teachers spend more of their own money on things for the classroom than any other country. And that could that tip into, oh, well, I'm now going to buy this AI tool to help me save it as a teacher out of my own pocket to save me an hour or two. So I think there's an interesting thing around what is the approach going to be? Are we going to give teachers the tools, or are they going to have to pick them for themselves? You say, wouldn't it be great if we just got rid of some of those compliance requirements? That isn't the way we seem to be going in the world.
I agree.
And the difficulty is if you have a central education system that says, oh, we're going to build a tool to help teachers, that compliance mindset will come in. So, oh, no, we can't have it do that. Whereas somebody in an ed tech company will go, well, I can write something that writes lesson plans, punches the thing and puts it in the folder. The system wouldn't create things like that because it's like, well, no, teachers must do that. So, you know, I think we don't know where we're going to end up. We're on a journey. That journey is getting faster and faster and more difficult to keep up with. I think probably the thing for people is just go at your own pace. You're going to have to continue to commit to learning. And goodness knows, how do we balance the learning about AI with the learning about everything else?
And I'm a bit torn between this as well. Just to add a quick point from me, as I totally agree with you, Ray. But I'm a bit torn because, like, you've got some amazing teachers and some amazing ed tech companies globally that are coming up with some amazing ideas. And that's what we need. You need that momentum, and you always have, you know, building on the Microsoft platform, building on Google Cloud platform, building on OpenAI's services, open source services. But then schools are often then stuck because of enterprise data protection and compliance, because there's also the other side of this, you know, a danger of, you know, not being able to see chats or see conversations. And we know that OpenAI have been sued in the US by a family, child protection issues and a kid committing suicide and things. So this dark area here, but we need those ideas. But also, and we're very there, because what we've seen over time is that a Microsoft or a Google will embed teacher feedback stuff in Google Classroom or inside Microsoft Teams and the assignments there, or Canvas will develop it in there. So the large LMSs will start to develop those things. So there is an interplay with the way the technology works. So we are seeing a lot of those interconnections through MCP technologies and whatever, where agents can sit inside those platforms. But I think the other issue here is also, is that what about students actually accessing their own AI? Do we really need to care about that? If we were really going to challenge education, maybe we don't worry about these big systems of schools, because ultimately, me as a student, I can go out and buy my own AI, and I can buy Copilot, and it can do my PowerPoints for me. You know, maybe, like Ray said about people buying their own stuff or teachers buying their own tools, maybe students will, and then that'll negate anything we do at a system level, right?
Yeah, but I think they're doing that already, you know, and I think in the Irish system, we know that the students are, and again, it goes back to that equity question that you raised, that those that have the disposable income and who know about these things are going and buying the enterprise versions, while maybe the others less informed are using free versions. But I'm conscious of time, and I'm going to ask you, have you decided what's going to be the focus of the AI and Education podcast series for 2026, gentlemen? And when are you back on air?
Yeah, there's so many ways we can take this, and it's about getting those stories out. I think we've already lined up, you know, 6 or 7 guests talking about humanity and the human element of creativity. So, like, have we landed on anything yet, Ray? You know, we've got about 7 or 8 guests lined up.
Yeah, I think the pattern we developed in the last year is probably the pattern will continue. And so that pattern is every other episode, news and research, you know, because people are interested in the tech news as it applies to education. Well, somebody's just launched Model X and it's amazing and the social buzz is amazing about it. But we get into the conversation about what does that mean for education? And we ignore some of the stuff that really doesn't have any relevance, but all the geeks are talking about it anyway. That and the what are we learning from the research that is being done? I think that's so important because, you know, think about it. There's been a lot of conversation about AI as a tutor driven out of the Two Sigma research in 30 years or 40 years ago, which has only been replicated twice. Yeah. So not even sure if that research is true, but the whole tech industry has jumped on and go, oh, AI can be a tutor. So I think talking about that research, talking about the successes and failures that people are finding is really important. But then I think we interview two different groups of people. One is the thinkers. It's the people that have the big ideas, but the other is the doers. And I think the reason it's important to talk to the doers is that they're not wound up in this theoretical what might be possible. They are wound up in the, this is what I did with my kids in my class. And so I think that pattern of, brilliant. Yes, there's some excitement about the news and the latest AI developments and what it might mean, but it's that balance between the thinkers and the doers that becomes really important.
I think what I'd like to add as well is, and we've talked about this year as well, but we haven't really done any episodes on it, but actually some quick wins on like how Ray might use ChatGPT in his day-to-day, so and how he could use Copilot and how he could use Gemini and what these things are, because there's a lot of jargon and products out there, but actually let's just use them and just try to explain quickly, very quickly for a teacher who can just see, okay, well, I can use that to do this, you know, that kind of thing as well, some quick wins.
Well, I'm going to close the conversation because we could go on for another hour and I have a whole list of things here I didn't even get near, but it's been fascinating talking to you both. I hope our paths cross again, either online or in person. And I just want to say on behalf of Pat, John and I from the H2 team, I would just like to say a huge thank you to you both for being so generous of giving of your time and sharing your insights and knowledge with us. And I look forward to listening to you again in the new year. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, mate.